a radio show host called Paul Gallant.
It's Paul Gallant.
Pauly G Show. He's the best in Houston.
The most interactive sports radio show in Houston.
Paul, what's good, my man?
How you doing, Paul?
What are you doing, Paul?
Join the devastation by dialing or texting 713-780-3776.
I love the show. Y'all keep it up.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's Paul Gallant.
You are definitely living in the hindsight world today, Paul.
John Weeks, the snapper. Cam Johnston, the holder. Fairbairn's kick is good. And the Texans win it here in Nashville.
Let me tell you something. On this glorious Monday, December 18th of 2023, let me tell you something. There's a four-letter word in our English language. It's called grit. Now, I ain't never seen no dictionary. I'm just a rancher in East Texas who happens to cover football for a living. I ain't like those frauds up in Nashville at their bachelorette parties and their head coach who's too much of a chicken to wear a cowboy hat for a whole game, even though he was supposedly paying homage to the great Bum Phillips. I'm just going to go back to that word, grit. I don't have no fancy dictionary. I don't. So I don't know what the word grit means until yesterday when I saw your Houston Texans take down the Tennessee Titans, Oilers, whatever. They can kiss my grits because the Texans are grit. And damn, that was a beautiful victory yesterday, 16-19, over the Tennessee Titans, who were cosplaying as the Houston Oilers. Those some bitches, we kicked the door in on them. Hey, Amy Adams, what's your deal? Look at your cute little uniforms, your pretty little clothes. Oh no, did you get your own skid marks on it? Are you covered in your own poo after making an ass of yourself and showing your ass to the whole world? That's damn right. All right, I'll start talking like a normal person. Hello, everybody, and welcome aboard the Paul Gallant Show on this Monday, December 18th. I am pumped. That was truly a team win in a sport that seems to be going away from that concept. No, I'm not about to dive down a Tucker Paulson rabbit hole. I just like seeing teams win when the odds are stacked against them. And you could argue, okay, but the Texans were playing against a Tennessee Titans team with a rookie quarterback, a team that doesn't have much to play for. Yeah, technically they weren't eliminated at that moment in time, but the odds were very much against that team making it. But that Titans team still has some very good players. That Titans team had a miraculous comeback against one of the better teams in the AFC on Monday, the Miami Dolphins. It has Derrick Henry, who in four of the last six games against the Texans had 200-plus yards. It has DeAndre Hopkins, who of course used to play for the Houston Texans. And I think there's a strong argument to make that DeAndre Hopkins was as good as Andre Johnson. I'm not going to make that because that's not the point of today's show. That was just a gritty team win in a sport where it feels like you're effed without a quarterback. And the Texans didn't do it with their backup quarterback. They did it with their third string quarterback in Case Keenum, a man who I have talked about for an abnormal amount of time. Sean Mapes, I'll have you know, I used to talk about Case Keenum when I was in college. I'm not kidding about that. We used to have some random caller call into our Saturday, we're all hungover sports talk show and ask us questions about Case Keenum. Ask my friend Gus. I don't know why this person always called in asking about Case Keenum, who went to college for like 6 years or so. But here I am yet again talking about Case Keenum. And there's been some interesting roads with Case Keenum. You know, there was a time where I thought his fans were just psychotic and delusional and needed to calm down. Like, he had six great quarters against the Chiefs and Colts in 2013. Then he was very bad afterwards. But then he came back and it was like, oh, that's cool to see Case Keenum back in there. There's lots of Cougs out there. I am an honorary Coug, of course. There's lots of Cougs out there who believe that he was like the prince who was promised.
But here we are, Sean. It's Saturday, and all of a sudden, I wake up, and I check my phone, and I texted you, like, in all caps, saying, oh, my God, are we about to get Case Keenum on Sunday? Yes! Let's go!
That, I still, that's such a wild move to just be like, Case Keenum, because I originally thought, I was like, okay, maybe just as a, like, against the Oilers, who better to defend the city's honor
legitimately
than Case Keenum?
The guy who's been a quarterback longer than anyone in Houston history. Honestly, seriously, that's the number one longest tenured quarterback in the history of Houston sports. He's like the John Weeks, the Texans long snapper, of quarterbacking. Because Warren Moon didn't play his whole career here. Deshaun Watson, gone. I mean, Dan Pastorini asked out when he was with the Oilers during the Love You Blue days. Like, legitimately, Case Keenum is the longest tenured Houston quarterback ever.
Like a decade non-consecutive.
It's not consecutive, that's for sure. And it's been weird because it was 2013 and 2014 and now 2023, almost 10 years later.
Well, it was also like 04 to 2010, too.
Right.
In college.
Right. It's crazy. I mean, we're talking about, as you said, 04 to 2010. We're talking about like 20 years of quarterbacking in some capacity in Houston, obviously non-consecutive. So I am wearing a Love You Blue colored Houston Cougars shirt today.
That's a good shirt.
It's actually authentic.
Oh, they can sell those?
They have not sent a cease and desist for this.
Wow.
So it's Case Keenum with this completely hamstrung team going up there and getting the Oilers, my bad, the Titans, pretty little clothes, all dirty, holding that L. And the impressive things that this team did along the way. First off, Devin Singletary. Good God, brother. I hope you're getting an ice bath, everything afterwards. That was a hell of a performance by him.
He's so good. Like, is Devin Singletary, like, actually, like, like a really good running back?
Statistically, Sean, he's one of the top four in the NFL since week 10. And then yesterday happened. So that was going into the game. In that game, he has the big 41-yard catch and run to set the Texans up for the game-winning field goal. He technically walked the game off with a touchdown right before that got called back by a hold. I don't know about that call, but whatever. He was so good in this game. And it's saying something because I think Dameon Pierce is a very talented running back. I think he's a good player. But Singletary has taken this, and that was the whole game plan yesterday. They gave the ball to other running backs exactly twice. Daria Gumbawale, one carry. Dameon Pierce, one carry. Steven Sims had more carry than Dameon Pierce. Probably shouldn't do that. That's neither here nor there. Singletary was an effing man in this game behind the Texans offensive line that is very hamstrung right now. They didn't even have George Fant. They had a very difficult time protecting Keenum. I think the reason Keenum was in the game because he can move, unlike Davis Mills. So, number one, Singletary. Holy smokes, what a performance. Number two, who would have thought that, and I'm going to butcher it, I don't care. I'm trying to give proper honor to a man who has a very intimidating name. John Christian Kaimino Lo Mikaikioke Kumupu'a'a. Fairbairn had an awesome return. And it makes you wonder, where the hell would the Houston Texans be if they'd had Fairbairn all season long? And specifically for that game against the Jacksonville Jaguars, they would be in first place. But it's not just that he hit 250-plus yard field goals, which is something that every Texan coach should now understand he's capable of doing. Lovie Smith forgot. There was a moment D'Amico forgot this year, Sean.
I will say D'Amico, though, in overtime, very much learned his lesson because they played for the field goal hard after the aforementioned Devin Singletary catch and run, and then the play that the hold that called back the walk-off that he had. Then it was just like, run up the middle twice, and then they kicked it on third down with 2 seconds left.
Actual thought that went through my head, Sean.
A tie would be hilarious?
Well, no, it wouldn't have been hilarious. Not this game. You had to win this one.
I think especially with,
the Oilers uniforms, you had to win this. I would have been more pissed with a tie than I would with a win. But There was a moment towards the end of overtime before, towards the end of the fourth quarter, before Davis Mills had the worst Hail Mary attempt I think I've ever seen. God, Davis, that I feel bad for Davis, but
almost
Jesus Christ, he almost fumbled it. I mean, the only thing Adam Archuleta, the color commentator for that game, was right about the whole game, and my God, he sucks. But the only thing he was right about the whole game was where Davis Mills is like holding the ball like a loaf of bread and basically trying to give it away. But before that Hail Mary, Sean, I was thinking to myself, could Kyeme Fairbairn hit a 65-yard field goal?
Like he's Sebastian Janikowski?
Seriously.
Like lining up like behind...
He's hit like a 61-yarder? Right. Yeah. Well, I was thinking, I was trying to do the math in my head. I was like, okay, so it's 8 yards behind the line of scrimmage is how long a field goal is. So
you had like 17 to...
Right, you had 17. So I was thinking to myself, okay, if they're at the 50 and it's a 67-yard field goal, would you trust Fairbairn with it? I'll say this. I trust Fairbairn with a 67-yard field goal more than I trust Davis Mills with a Hail Mary again. I definitely trust him on that.
100% true.
And I got to say, those field goals, he made them by a lot. Like, it wasn't like they went over the crossbar like with Amendola who doinked the front bar. I mean, those carried.
Yeah, no. I mean, I would have to check the altitude of Nashville to see if we can get some some Mile High Stadium. You can add a couple of yards. But no, Kyeme Fairbairn was awesome. I think, if we're going to do like credit pie for the game, I don't know if this is a little – no, this is about right to do credit pie. I think obviously the defensive front probably number one for me.
Oh, seven sacks.
Seven sacks.
12
no
tackles
Anderson.
For a loss. Sean, do you know what...
Almost murdered Will Levis.
Derrick Henry's final numbers off the top of your head.
I saw that.
16 carries for 9 yards. Are you effing kidding me? Holy crap.
He also had 4 receptions for also very little yards. It was the first time in NFL history any player has gotten 20 or more touches with like less than 10 yards.
He could not do a damn thing.
Washed.
And Will Levis looked like Batman in The Dark Knight Rises going up against Bane. Now, I guess he was totally fine.
He walked off the CBS commentary. This probably never happened in NFL history before.
They suck. I hate that team. I actually do not like them.
They were like, we cannot show this replay because of how graphic it was. And then like after the injury timeout, they show Will Levis walking by himself into the injury tent. I'm like, show the replay.
How many things have they been wrong about? And this is a CBS thing too. But okay, amazingly, worse than Spiro Dinas and Adam Archuleta on the call. I'm sorry, we're getting negative already. This is just who I am. The cameraman for that game should be shot. They should be shot. That person needs to be sent out of this field forever. I have never seen a camera person worse. To the point where, look, going to a football game, it's not fun in 2023. It's not. You got to drive in. You got to pay for parking. You know, it's going to take you a while to get into the stadium because of security. Your seats are probably not going to be as good as your view would be if you're watching the game at home on TV. You have to pay for the drinks. It takes you forever to get out, except for the exception of Sunday in Nashville, where this bozo couldn't get one play. He could not. You had to wait until the replay after every single play to officially know what happened if the ball was not 10, not 5, if the ball was 2 yards downfield. And even then, you weren't 100% sure because of that effing bozo. Sorry we're being mean here, but like the biggest losers in Sunday, it was not even the Tennessee Titans and their Houston Oilers unis. It was the CBS broadcast team. Jesus, you set it back years. Could a Sean Mapes, University of Texas broadcast production, do better with no heads up than the CBS team? Could a Syracuse broadcast team of me and my drunken college friends do the same thing? Yes. CBS? Like, I mean, cancel yourself. Awful.
Yeah. I the first throw, I was like, because the first time I like super noticed how like the play was not in frame when the ball hit the receiver was, I think it was like a deep pass from Will Levis, and at first I was like, whoa, he just smoked that one. Like I was like he must have thrown it 900 miles per hour,
right? And then I noticed, just a routine pass.
Yeah, then I noticed like every pass. Like you said, that's more than like 2 yards from the line of scrimmage was like that.
I can't believe how bad that guy was. Or girl. I don't know who it was. I'm not going to assume the gender.
Very inclusive of you. Yeah, no, that was a tough one. That was so – that was – I hope the Texans, especially with this win, hopefully CJ Stroud comes back this week. I hope we've, as a franchise, officially graduated from the CBS like seventh team on a weekend. Can we as a franchise do that?
Spiro Dedis, if you listen to the show last week, I mentioned how there used to be broadcasters who would just butcher Texans names all the time. And Spiro Dedis always used to say like DeAndre Watkins or Deshaun Hopwatt. Like he could not handle all the many Texans D, etc. Deontay, DeAndre, Deshaun. He couldn't do it. He kept on butchering it. Anyway, most interactive sports talk show in Houston. I feel like I've been too negative talking about the broadcasting, but that was going to get out sooner or later. So we officially put it to rest.
We can flush it. Now it's all credit. We're throwing credit all over the place for the next 2 hours.
We're high on the fumes of victory right now, you know? We're high on them. So let's have some fun. Do the Houston Texans have a quarterback controversy? Is it time for Case Keenum to officially be QB1? Again, 713-780-3776 to call in and text it. Listen, I don't believe that, but I would like some of you Keenum truthers who I used to do battle with online, I want you guys back today because today is your day. It's our day. It's the greatest day of your life. Stick around.
ESPN 97.5.com. You need to learn.
Let the boy watch. He needs to learn the way I learned from my father.
Keenum, little misdirection, looking. Everyone's covered. Keenum throws back foot, and that one is snatched.
No way.
Unbelievable. Dalton Schultz.
This is Case Keenum, and you're listening to the self-proclaimed greatest flag football player in Houston. Really? In Houston sports radio, Paul Gallant, something like that, on ESPN 97.5. Are we sure about that?
Take a bow, Case Keenum. Hey, Adam Archuleta, shut your ass up. Telling Case Keenum to not throw that YOLO ball? Welcome to the Case Keenum Show. That's how it goes. Just like that. That play was terrifying, though. Especially because it took you 5 seconds to figure out where the ball was because the camera guy added a little unnecessary drama to it. I'm sorry. It's an NFL game. It's not Cloverfield. Figure it out.
I mean, legitimately, you mentioned that, like, Syracuse, like, broadcast students and UT broadcast students could have done better. Like, we did broadcast games, and we...
Yes!
You know what we did? Got the whole play in every shot. That's what we did.
Zoom out! If you can't turn the camera, zoom out! Anyway, we don't want to make it too much about this.
Because today is about Case Keenum.
It's about Case Keenum. Again, I talked about my seasonal Texans depression, my STD, which I was dealing with last week because I wasn't sure who was going to be under center on Sunday. I figured it was going to be Davis Mills. I wanted it to be Case Keenum. Remember when I was beating the table for Keenum to be QB2 during the offseason? Like, I wanted that to happen, and it was a serious belief. I think Keenum offers more as a quarterback because he has a little bit more mobility and he has a little bit more creativity. Obviously, that can bite you in the tuchus. But in a game like yesterday, you need to have a playmaker to do the occasional big play or to extend a play. But the floor is open today because I want the Keenum truthers out. I want you to dust off your battle red Case Keenum jersey. I saw a couple of people wearing it because I was pumped. My seasonal Texans depression was over on Saturday as soon as I saw that Aaron Wilson of KPRC had reported that he was back. Because it just wasn't something that I thought was on the table. Past Texans teams, they would have gone back to Davis Mills 100% or some other boring backup. And with Keenum, obviously we have all of these years that we've spent with him. And it does have us wondering on today, Case Keenum Day, even though Case Keenum wasn't the main reason for the Texans winning. It was Devin Singletary and Kyahmi Fairbairn and that defense. But on today's day, I mean, where does Case Keenum rank in the Mount Rushmore of Houston sports? And I know a lot of people are saying right now, like, Paul, wow,
This really seems like you didn't do a lot of show prep on Sunday night. Instead, you decided to watch Batman the Animated Series on HBO Max while also watching the Jaguars blow another big game, this time against the Baltimore Ravens, while Trevor Lawrence was doing what he does best, which is fumble. He has 31 career fumbles now after the two last night, both of which were funny. Paul, like, this is lazy radio. No, it's not. It's not. It is not. Because Case Keenum's been a part of our lives since when he first went to Houston, which was in 1972. And since he's been here in Houston, going all the way back to 1951, you know, he was there with Wade Phillips at Houston. And Bum Phillips, probably? I don't know. Like, all I know is that he's been here for a very, very long time. Since the foundation of Houston, Case Keenum, a lot of people forget, but, you know, the Battle of San Jacinto, where we caught the Mexicans napping. No, seriously, that's what happened. Santa Ana, they were napping. Again, we're not playing into stereotypes. That legitimately happened. It was a siesta. Case Keenum was there. Case Keenum was a part of the troops that were battling against the Mexican army in the Battle of San Jacinto. He's been here a really long time. A really, really long time. So he's got to be on that Mount Rushmore of Houston sports. Is he a vampire? I don't know. I mean, I have been watching a little bit of that HBO show, True Blood, and there's a vampire in that show. He fought in the Civil War, so like, it's possible that Case Keenum's a vampire. I don't know. Still, he still has got that youthful charm and energy. I mean, we saw it after the game.
I will say he is probably the only person in the city of Houston that definitely still remembers the Alamo.
100%.
Like, he actually remembers. He was like, yeah, some of my friends died in the Alamo.
Mm-hmm. And like a lot of people who left Tennessee for Houston because it's better, like Sam Houston and Davy Crockett, RIP, true Texan. You know, you steal the Oilers unis. All right, we steal Davy Crockett in his coonskin hat. But yeah, I mean, Case Keenum also came over here on the Mayflower. So he's like kind of from Boston like me. And then he moved down south to Texas. And of course, it was a big part of that battle. So, Mount Rushmore of Houston sports, obviously Hakeem Olajuwon, obviously Jose Altuve, and I mean, are you really going to try to put another quarterback in over Case Keenum? We got to have a quarterback. We got to. Can't be Dante Pastorini. I love Dante. Good dude. He did ask out of town. And very weird, by the way. Go back in history and look it up. It's very weird. Like Dante, he wrote about it in his book that John Lopez wrote with him. Like, he's like, yeah, I just like wanted to leave. So they just traded him, I think, to the New Orleans. Wait, no, they traded him to the, I think it was to the Raiders, like a straight up swap for Kenny Stabler. Just random.
Wow, the snake. Straight player empowerment era back in the day.
Very much.
You know, all credit to him, but I don't think he threw for 19,000 college yards.
No, I don't think so either.
It's a different generation. You know, the rules are so favorable for the offensive players these years. So?
I mean, not really. Case Keenum played in 2008. So He played at U of H in 2008. So
yeah.
Wasn't that favorable?
Mm-hmm.
He has over 20,000 passing yards for a Houston team, combined college and professional.
Yeah.
He has 20,000 passing yards.
It's got to be Keenum on the Mount Rushmore of Houston sports. This, as a lot of people say, which honestly I don't believe, but Houston's a football town. Well, no, it's whoever's doing best. Yeah. That's fine.
Well, if it is a football town, it can be Altuve, Olajuwon, and two football players, J.J. Watt, Case Keenum.
Mm-hmm.
Kyme Fairbairn, others receiving votes.
Kyme Fairbairn, definitely. John Weeks, also receiving
John
votes.
Weeks, others receiving
votes. Slick Mac comments, twitch.tv/USBN975. It's Warren Moon if we have to have a quarterback, period. No, because Warren Moon believes that the Oilers belong in Nashville. Now, he probably, like most of the guys that are not named Bruce Matthews, ex-Oilers, he has probably been bought and paid for. There was only one guy who was an Oiler and a Titan. It was Bruce Matthews, because obviously Steve McNair passed away. I don't know if Eddie George was here long enough to make that claim, but Matthews was here for a while. And Matthews says, yeah, it belongs in Houston. Warren Moon, we had him on this show before, and Warren Moon did not declare allegiance to our fine city, even though, honestly, Houston probably should have put up a little bit more of a fight to keep the uniforms. Like, I get it. The Adams family sucks, and what they did this past week, it's so great that their ass is getting shown to them because they showed their ass. Because what they did this past week was entirely trollsmanship. But at the same time, the city of Houston should have sued to keep the unis and the history.
It was trollsmanship, but in classic Tennessee Titans way, blew up in their face like Wile E. Coyote.
Exactly.
Like, it could not be more, if you're a Titans fan, it could not have been more perfectly set up to be, ha-ha, gotcha. We're wearing the Oilers jerseys against you. And not only that, it's a little bit of like a homecoming game because you guys are starting either Davis Mills or Case Keenum, which before the game, if you're a Tennessee Titans fan, you're like, okay, cool,
yeah,
awesome.
If you care.
Super caught a break. Tank Dell, Nico Collins both out, Will Anderson out. Offensive line, I mean, since day one has been in tatters. And somehow, some way, Kaimi Fairbairn and Case Keenum with Jonathan Gennard, Malik Collins, they went into Tennessee and won.
Yeah.
They won. They even bigger than winning, they held Derrick Henry to under like 10 yards. And
nothing.
That to me is the most like, oh my God, the bad man is gone. This is truly, truly a new era in Houston sports because Derrick Henry against all other Texans teams, we've seen it, he would have ran for 250 yards.
Do you think they're going to wear those again against the Texans?
This like in
the Oilers
2 weeks.
Uniforms. No, because they won't in 2 weeks unless there's a white version, but I don't think they're allowed to. I think you're only allowed to do alternate jersey at home, and I think you're only allowed to do it twice. So
okay. But like in future years?
I wonder if they'll ever do this again. Because this has so spectacularly backfired for them.
I doubt it. I seriously doubt it.
We are making fun of them. The entire NFL collective is not making fun of them. I think some people are like,
some
karma.
People got some jokes off. I saw that. Some like national people got some jokes off.
My joke is this. This is as on brand for Houston Oilers football as you're ever going to see.
Hell yeah.
That's the funny thing about it is the Oilers,
the
no
history.
Offense to the people who grew up watching the team. I mean, it's a choking dog franchise. Like, they blew a 35-3 lead against the Buffalo Bills, who were also led by a backup quarterback. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's the
Frank Reich, that's
the history they're dying to protect.
Right.
Is blowing leads, is disappointing in not even the biggest moments possible, just any big moment.
Right. The Bills did not have Jim Kelly for that game. Jim Kelly, like Hall of Fame quarterback, they did not have Jim Kelly. It was Frank effing got fired by the Panthers after the worst start in recent NFL history, considering they had a number one overall pick. But Frank Reich did that. So it's very on brand for the Oilers to lose to a backup quarterback while wearing those uniforms and collapse because they were up 13-0. And that game did look like it was going to get out of hand after that pick six by Keenum.
13-0 lead to Case Keenum. Yeah. No offense, but come on, guys.
Sheesh.
Come on. Case Keenum throwing to Noah Brown.
Mm-hmm.
This is how they got eliminated.
Someone's texting in, by the way, on the most interactive sports talk show in Houston. I do have to address this, Sean. Wasn't Paul Gallant hating on the Texans last week? Yeah, they lost to the Jets, guys. They lost to the Jets.
Also,
you see what happened to the Jets yesterday? Jesus. Zach Wilson, it was good that he got concussed in that game because he was not doing anything good in the NFL ever again. They got exposed last week. So, yeah, I'm a bandwagoner, baby, and I'm back on the bandwagon because Case Keenum's leading the charge.
Also, welcome to NFL coverage and not just 2023, but like basically my entire life is, hey, when you win, you're – awesome. There's no criticism. When you lose, the season's over. That's how it goes. See also the Dallas Cowboys last week to this week.
I got a question, Sean, too. We might have to change the studio. I swear to God, ESPN is just showing a Livy Dunn infomercial, and I feel like it's been going on a very long period of time. I'm not going to lie. I'm a little distracted. It's just Livy Dunn in yoga pants. Like,
all right.
I swear.
Let's go to break.
It's the Paul Gallant Show up next. AFC playoff picture. Does it make any sense? And that is interesting, Sean. Let me tell you about my friends at Pajama Gram. Yoga pants look good. You know what looks better? Pajama Gram's naturally nude pajamas. It'll make you a holiday hero. It's so good that they sell out every single year. They're known for ultimate comfort and style. They're soft. They're silky. Better than lingerie with a curved, caressing fit. Ow! Taking a breath. Here's the kicker. When you order naturally nude pajamas today, you will get a free naturally nude nightie. $75 savings on a luxurious 2-in-1 complete gift. And better yet, with Pajamagram, you can even add gift packaging. If you ask me, it's the one holiday gift
that's sure to make her happy. And look, you're running out of time. You got to get it all done. So go Pajamagram today for the Naturally Nude Pajamas before they sell out. Naturally Nude Pajamas, pajamagram.com.
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5, home of the Norwegian Blue.
Remarkable bird, the Norwegian Blue, isn't it? Beautiful plumage.
We're ready for some football, baby.
Tackling the biggest issues in the NFL.
This just in.
Here's the 10-minute drill with Paul Gallant.
Football time.
We're going to try to make sense of the AFC playoff picture in a moment. First, I want to read a couple of comments on the most interactive sports talk show in Houston. Joan tweets in, at Gallant says, as much as I loved the Letterman jackets, the Titans wearing the Oilers was just as big a disaster. Just saying. This is their own Letterman jacket game. This is their own Letterman jacket fiasco. It's a little bit different. We might have to create some rules for it because also the Rangers wore Letterman jackets and then they won the World Series, but they blew the AL West. So what really happened?
Astros still won the AL West.
Is there anyone who does that?
Yeah, well, we won the division. Yeah, we are AL West champs.
I mean, we do play the... a lot of people wondered what would happen if the Astros didn't win the AL West when we played Astros countdown.
That's
so
true.
Is it us? Is it us that do that?
We might be a part of the problem. There's a text. It's, I think, well thought out. It's nuanced. And it deserves a seat at the table here on the Paul Gallant Show, the most interactive sports talk show in Houston. Real question. If you invented something and built it to be successful and then decided to move, wouldn't you want to take that with you? You own it. It's yours. The history might have lived in Houston, but that belongs to that family, despite what you may think of them personally. So for everyone saying that they need to make up their own history, they did, and they took it with them. Well, friend, I'm glad you texted that in, because I think it's important that we get all perspectives. And my thoughts on this are,
shut up, bitch! Shut up! He lost me when he said, if you invented something and built it to be successful.
Yeah.
I would quibble with the Oilers being successful and a successful NFL franchise.
If you're watching on Twitch right now, here's one bird, here's two. Amy Adams. Eat it!
Are we getting kicked off of Twitch for that?
No, then we're fine.
Okay.
The radio is the concern.
I didn't know. I mean, I'm sure Twitch has rules for... middle fingers?
Well, I don't know.
I saw that they had a ban on nudity that they lifted for artistic nudity, in quotes.
Yeah.
And then after, like, 1 week, they were like, nope, ban's back on. No more nudity. You cannot be trusted.
Can't do it. I will say to this texter, I'm tipping my hat to you. I'm glad that you came in. I had to respond as such. This person continues saying, I feel like if the Texans and Titans were more successful, nobody would care. Well, the thing is, you mentioned that you built something to be successful. Like, the Oilers were not successful, and Nashville didn't want them to wear it. So what's weird to me is that they went away from wearing the cool throwback uniforms that they had the entire time they were there until legitimately just this year. They've worn the 09 throwbacks where they have the light blue helmets. And those suck. Like, the old AFL Oiler unis suck. They're not good. They're cool, I guess, but they're not great. Like, the AFL uniforms, for the most part, weren't great. They all got dolled up a little bit as the 70s and 80s went on. And this person also says, I don't see Baltimore and Indianapolis chopping at each other's throats anymore. No, that still happens. The biggest controversy of late, the Indianapolis Colts wore Baltimore Colts throwbacks where the jerseys were the same, but the helmet was slightly different. There was nothing on the sides of the helmet. The horseshoes are just on the back of the helmet. And this was a big deal because Johnny Unitas famously, after the Colts moved from Baltimore to Indianapolis, basically said, like, F Indianapolis. Like, he didn't want to be a part of the history. It's obviously further removed, but, I mean, you still see it with the Browns and Ravens, too. Like, it's always going to be something. Maybe we got a little bit of closure on it on Sunday, though. It was definitely satisfying, that's for damn sure. All right. Tie-breaking scenarios for the AFC. They're confusing. So a lot of people are wondering,
what the hell's going on, how, if the season were to end today, are specifically the Cincinnati Bengals in the playoffs when the Texans beat the Cincinnati Bengals. That's because the Texans are in the middle of what is officially a four-way tie at 8-6, which is also complicated by the fact that the AFC South has three teams that are 8-6 at the top of it. But if three or more clubs are tied, here's how the rules work. I'm just going to read them to you because they're confusing to me. Step one, you apply the division tiebreaker to eliminate all but the highest ranking club in each division prior to proceeding to step two. The original seeding within a division upon application of the division tiebreaker remains the same for all subsequent applications of the procedure that are necessary to identify the two wildcard participants. So you got four. You have to do this once and then twice and then three times. It's confusing to determine the one through four order. Two, after you figure that out, head-to-head sweep. Only applicable if one club has defeated each of the others or if one club has lost to each of the others. That has yet to happen. Could it happen? I suppose if the Browns find their way back into us and it's a five-way tie because the Browns are 9-5, maybe. But then after that, it's best one-loss percentage in games played within the conference. So it's conference record, then it's division record, then it's strength of victories in all games, then it's strength of schedule in all games, then it's best combined ranking among conference team in points scored and points allowed, then it's best combined ranking among all teams in points scored and points allowed in all games, then it's best net points in conference games, then it's best net points in all games, then it's best net touchdowns in all games, and then it's a coin toss. We're at step three, which is one loss, games played within the conference. And the thing that sucks for the Houston Texans right now is that even though a couple of their losses were out of conference, specifically to the Falcons, specifically to the Panthers, right now the Texans' conference record is 5-4. Now you may be wondering, wait a second, that makes no sense. The Bengals are 3-6 in the AFC and are 0-4 in their division. What is happening? What is going on? I don't know. I am not going through that process. I'm just going to trust what the NFL's website says, okay? Because the season isn't over yet. We still got three games left for each of these teams. It's too much, Sean. And you might be thinking to yourself, Paul, you're not a professional. Yes. You just found that out?
So you're telling me if the season ended today, doesn't actually matter because the season won't end today. And
yes,
the Texans specifically have games against the Colts, who are they're literally tied with.
Yes.
And then with the Browns, who are one game ahead of this hornet's nest of tiebreakers. So will it just figure itself out on the field?
I don't know.
I mean, there probably will be some tiebreakers, especially with the wild card teams, but I was telling you before the show, like, I don't care. Like, just tell me the tiebreakers and all that and the clinch scenarios before the last game of the season.
Here's in a nutshell, Sean. I'm with you. Like, we'll figure it out at the end. But in a nutshell, since the Colts have been swept by the Jaguars are in first in the AFC South because they were 1-1 against the Texans. Since the Colts are currently 1-0 against the Texans, they have the tiebreaker. But if the Texans win that, it'll take care of itself. Really, that's like the most important game left on the schedule. And then as far as why the Texans are the 8 seed and the Bengals are the 6 seed, the Bengals win the tiebreaker over Buffalo and Indianapolis because they beat both of those teams. And then the division tiebreak, it was initially used to eliminate Houston because Indy again has beaten the Texans. All of this is because the Texans and Colts have only played each other once and don't play each other until the last game of the year. So, again, as Sean said,
a lot of football left.
Just wait till we...
It's a cliche for a reason. 18.
Is it 19 now?
18.
Is it...
There's 17 games. You only get one bye week.
Right. Okay. Thank you.
Again. Probably could slip another bye week in there, but...
I'm smart! No, I'm not.
Thanks, Fredo.
Hey, that's racist.
I can't say the.
You can't call me that. Oh,
yeah, I'm sorry.
After Sean Stallone got inducted into the Italian American Sports Hall of Fame, wearing the most, my God, caricature cartoonish suit of all time. Of course, it's a green suit.
I forgot that the Italian people are in mourning right now because Tommy DeVito has a concussion.
Just give him some veal cutlets. They'll be fine. Just give him some cutlets. Paul Gallant Show, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Up next, you know, we've talked a lot about the Texans, but there's somebody else who has won my heart with what he did this weekend. You'll find out why next.
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Watch out for that foot bone.
I would like to rear up and jackknife my legs and kick you both in the jaw with my foot bone.
The Veritex Community Bank Studios. It's Paul Gallant. Join the conversation by dialing or texting 713-780-3776.
Winding down, working on Bain for three. Oh! Dylan!
Now he's talking! Now he's chirping!
I gotta say, and this was always going to happen because I loathed James Harden as a player. Just didn't like his style, flops, no defense. But this is not about him anymore. If the Texans lost yesterday, we would have led off today's show with a tribute to Dylan Brooks, who, in my opinion, a football player who plays basketball, is easily more likable than James Harden ever was as a player for the Rockets. And I know some of you guys don't know ball like me, right? I'm one of the preeminent basketball minds in the city of Houston. But how do you not love Dylan Brooks after his Friday performance in Memphis? I saw before the game, Vanessa got a video of him doing a stare down with some of his ex-teammates, and they're laughing. And I was texting with Vanessa, asking her, how did you not laugh there? Because remember, when we did the show together, Vanessa laughs on a lot of stuff. She kept a straight face there, though, because she was a professional journalist, and I'm not. So we get that video before the game, and at the very end, the Rockets rally, and it's Dylan Brooks who hits that shot to win the game for the Rockets on Friday. But that's where things... That's where things start to get really funny. Sean, immediately after Dylan Brooks hit that shot, he went over to one of his teammates and said, and this is not a fake quote. I thought this might be from Ballsack Sports or real NBA quotes. Quote, that's why they paid me 4 for $80. Because he got paid $80 million this offseason, guys.
Hey, listen. I will say, when that shot went up and it went in, I actually, on Friday night, sitting it in my living room.
Did you whoop?
Yes. I made it. Yeah. I was like, wow. Like, that was, oh my God, what a moment. That is like an actual storybook moment.
It's against his old team. They let him walk. They did it in a rather unceremonious way. And they did give him a tribute video, and the tribute video was actually nice. So they did handle it well. But they were the ones who publicly said, under no circumstances, that they would bring back Dylan Brooks. So for him, good for Dylan.
Yes.
Dylan the villain. And then, even better, in a game that a lot of you probably didn't watch because it was on at Sunday night, Dylan Brooks got ejected against the Bucks. He just got tossed. Why did he get tossed? Per the pool official, it was because he directed profanity at a referee. My goodness, we are having such a tough time backing the blue in the NBA. How soft are you? Now, to be fair, maybe to the referee, I believe that Dylan Brooks called him all sorts of words, and I think called him... A kitty cat. He called him a bleeping kitty cat.
The P word slipped in there.
Dropped the hard P bomb. But I got to say, I kind of like it.
The issue was Fred VanVleet caught an elbow in this game, and he, Brooks, got shoved. And he may have embellished it a little bit, and he felt like there was a double standard. So he and Ime Udoka went after the referees after the game. But I just like that Dylan Brooks, one night, Friday, hits a game-winning shot. Sunday, gets ejected in a game against the Bucks that got out of control because of the technical fouls that were given to Dylan Brooks and to Ime Udoka in the last couple of seconds.
I will say, not just Friday making the game-winning shot, but also Sunday's game where he gets thrown out for profanity directed towards an official. That is why the Rockets paid him 4 for $80.
Yes, like that's the real reason. You're right,
John. The combo of that is that's hard to beat within the Dylan Brooks experience. That's about how you draw it up. And the day before, shooting terribly. So it's like,
right,
shooting terribly, game winner, gets tossed, great defense throughout, boom, Dylan Brooks.
There's no denying that he made an ass of himself in that series against the Lakers in the playoffs. There's no denying it. But as we get further away from it, should I believe that Dylan Brooks, that LeBron James in a playoff game needed Dylan Brooks to get to the level that he got at the rest of that series? You could argue that. But how many of us don't like LeBron? How many of us? It doesn't mean as a person necessarily. It could be as a person. You might be annoyed by his politics and think that he's a little bit fake. But if you don't like LeBron, shouldn't you like one of the few players in the NBA who actually tries to antagonize him and does it publicly? I mean, doesn't that make him a little bit more likable? Serious question. I think it does, personally. And I mean, I'm someone who grew up in Boston and who hated LeBron, sports hated him, before it was even cool to sports hate LeBron. Why? Because he was playing the Celtics. That was legitimately it. This is how I was growing up with the Patriots. I hated Peyton Manning. Like, it was the same thing. Didn't mean I hate the person. I just didn't like him. But I like that somebody, even with LeBron James getting towards his 40s, is trying to antagonize LeBron. And then on top of that, he hits a game-winning shot and he's getting ejected in games. He's fun. He's making December basketball for the Rockets fun.
Yeah, like the reason, or I guess like how you get the guy who does all the stuff that Dylan Brooks does, like he's going to also chirp LeBron. Like he's in a playoff series, he's going to chirp the best player on the team that he's guarding. And it's a little bit of like, I like you said, like, did he poke the bear or did he play against like the second best player of all time? Like, which one was it?
Right. Great question.
Because did one of the Indiana Pacers poke the bear for the in-season tournament? Then one of the Pelicans, when they lost by 45, poke the bear? Like, or maybe LeBron's just an awesome player. I know. Shocking. Shocking to a lot of people.
No way.
LeBron just might be awesome. And yes, when you get Dylan Brooks, you know, if this Rockets team ever makes the playoff run, like, I'm going to go out there and guess that Dylan Brooks is going to try to push the buttons of whoever it is, like Shea Gilgeous Alexander, Paul George, Chet Holmgren, just any of these guys. Like, I'm guessing he's going to do that, and I would bet that it goes better for him than when he has to guard LeBron. Like, yes. I bet it will be less embarrassing.
We have some comments here. Waka Flocka Buck says he's proud of Dylan for not going Draymond Green. Not yet.
No. Well, let's wait until year three or four of this contract then.
Yeah.
Oh, but I will say, if he has Draymond Green's career for the Rockets,
good career.
Yeah, I'll take it.
That means multiple titles.
Four championships.
Right. B. Hannon says, not a P.J. Tucker. I think we all like P.J. Tucker a little more because he played for Texas.
Yes. And, yeah, P.J. Tucker, he also had...
Tucker's a little more skilled? Good corner three guy.
Yes. Catch and shoot corner three guy. Good offense rebounder. He also was less of like a cartoon character,
though. That's true. Yeah, he's actually authentically work ethic reasons lovable because of that. Beverly is Patrick Beverly, who I loved.
Is like the midpoint between
cartoonish. He's pretty high on the cartoon.
Now that he has a podcast, he's fully cartoon character.
Fully.
But when he was on the Rockets, he was still grinding just to be in the league when he was on the Rockets.
That is true.
Yeah, that's true. He's trying to keep from going back to Russia. 713-780-3776 to call in and to text in. Did the Texans win over the Titans cosplaying as the Oilers on Sunday give you closure for what the Adams family did to you and your family? You get to answer that next on the most interactive sports talk show in Houston. Stick around.
ESPN 97.5.com. Aya Game Powder.
All you walls, nightmares, I'm about to come through.